Welcome, kind listeners, to another thrilling episode of Fireside Mystery Theater. This episode is a result of a wonderful collaboration with WCZY Public Radio's Audiophile Search. Thanks to host Alex Severn for joining us and presenting the following fascinating story. It was taped live on Sunday, September 25th, 2016, at the Slipper Room in New York City for our show, Laugh, Clown, Laugh.
The placard shown at the opening of Preston Sturges' 1941 classic film, Sullivan's Travels, reads, "To the memory of those who made us laugh, the motley mountebanks, the clowns, the buffoons, in all times and nations whose efforts have lightened our burden a little, this picture is affectionately dedicated. The following tale of laughter, tears, and fears comes from the golden age of recorded entertainment, courtesy of our friends at the award-winning public radio show and podcast, Audiophile Search."
The year is 1926. The great silent film comedians of the day, legends such as Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, and Charlie Chaplin, are so popular with audiences, so exalted by cultural critics and the intelligentsia, that it's hard to believe that in just 3 years' time, with the advent of synchronized sound, their lives will be dramatically altered, and a glorious golden age of bold and exhaustive invention, innovation, and creativity will come to a cruel and sudden halt. Kingdoms will be surrendered and overthrown, and with the tremendous and brutal swiftness, the final curtain will fall on an era that, if not for the films left behind that prove it all actually happened, will be duly wiped from the surface of memory and the pages of history. This is the opening paragraph of Walker Wellman's fascinating new book, Forgotten Laughter, the story of Becky and Bucky Beans. Walker Wellman, artists like Charlie Chaplin and Keaton are still highly regarded by film historians, and I'd say that they're not exactly unknown to the larger public.
Yes, this is true. Definitely in the case of Chaplin, who managed to survive the sound era better than probably any of his contemporaries, except for Laurel and Hardy. But there are scores of others who enjoyed great popularity and fame, particularly Keaton, whose careers never really recovered from the advent of sound and the changes happening within the Hollywood studio system. The reasons are many and often complex, but it doesn't erase the fact that the results of the changes were devastating and unfair and sometimes tragic, as in the case of Becky and Bucky Beans.
Until I came across your book, I had no idea who they were. Tell me, how did such a great story manage to fall so far between the cracks? They were really super famous at one time, weren't they?
Yes, they were. And I'm hoping I can play at least a small part in bringing about a resurgence. They were absolutely, and are absolutely ripe for rediscovery. There was no one else quite like them.
Well, Walker, we're here to help tell this unbelievable and amazing story of Becky and Bucky Beans. This is Alex Severn from WZZY Public Radio. It's Audiophile Search, distributed by Public Radio Incorporated. Along with Walker Wellman and others, including archival recordings of people who knew and worked with Becky and Bucky Beans, we're going to attempt to piece together the story of this incredible forgotten comedy team. Stay with us.
Where I've just fallen. Rusty, your fiddle bow is in my... Thank you. Now, if I could only slide out of this trombone... get bent, why don't you?
Becky Beans, born Rebecca Wolpe in Chicago in 1890, along with her brother Bucky, born Frederick Wolpe in 1886, also in Chicago, were one of the most popular acts in the vaudeville circuit, and later had a string of successful films during the silent era. There are no clips of Bucky's voice available anywhere, unfortunately. Why is that? Walker Wellman.
Well, Bucky was a mute. He was unable to speak from the time he was a small child. He suffered from a rare neurological speech disorder known as anarthria. However, he and his sister were able to communicate through an invented sign language that only they seemed to be able to understand.
Wow, so during that time, when all those pantomime comedians like Chaplin or Harper Marx were pretending to be mute, Bucky Beans was the real deal?
That's right. Pretty crazy to think, huh? I might argue that the fact that he was an actual mute gave his performance a depth and authenticity that were that others simply did not possess.
This is Gerald Sutter. He produced the Becky Beans Show for CBS Radio from 1936 to 1940.
But you know, back from the time when they started out at vaudeville all the way to the silent pictures, Bucky was the actual brains of the outfit. He came up with the routines and the storylines, and Becky more or less was the straight woman. I don't know if you would call her that. She was more like the target, the victim of his character's pranks.
This is Ruth Ann Speller, Becky's co-star on the Becky Beans radio show.
She told me once out for the scene in that picture, what was it called? Bubbles and More Bubbles, I think it was called. Anyhow, there's a famous scene where she gets hit square in the face with a mallet while standing behind a curtain. Bucky thinks the copper's on the other side of the curtain, but it's really Becky, and he takes a big whack, and she nearly had to go to the hospital after that wallop. You see, the mallet was initially a prop made of foam or some soft material, but Bucky wasn't happy with the way the takes were coming out. So unbeknownst to his sister, he changed the prop, added a bit more weight to it, so that when she got smacked, pop! I mean, it sure got big laughs in the end, and it's funny as all hell to watch. But let's say that Becky was less than thrilled.
Walker Willman.
From the time they started making a splash at the Palace Theater in New York City in the early 1920s to their classic famous Players Lasky films a few years later, Bucky was more or less the dominant one, more the box office draw, the actual creative force.
Gerald Sutter.
They were so unique. There was no team like them before since that I know of. Think about it. An actual brother and sister comedy act. Name me another one. There are none. And on top of that, the brother is a mute clown, a prankster. And the sister is the uppity, put-upon character always getting socked in a jaw or, you know, kicked in the pants.
Walker Willman.
They were super unique for the time, but I think towards the end of their run, the public began to perceive them as something of a novelty act. I think that they became victims of their own originality, if that makes any sense.
The sound era, you know, more or less broke them up, but another problem was that they couldn't make their act work in feature-length pictures. What they did worked well in two-reelers, you know, the short subjects, but they couldn't keep up with Chaplin and the others in that regard.
They signed a contract with Vitaphone in 1930, and six short films were released before they were dropped from their contract in 1931. The shorts, needless to say, were six trees that all fell in the woods, and the duo now looked older, a little worse for the wear and tear. They seemed tired, and they couldn't figure out how to make the new technology work in their favor. Only one of the talkies they made, Hoof for Your Supper, survives, and no prints or negatives of the other five films have surfaced since the time that they were released.
And who are you, sir? Well, I'm sorry, I can't understand you. What's that there, your business card? The Great Buccaccino. Ah, yes, you're late. You were supposed to be here with all the food for our party over an hour ago. Well, some cook you are. For a chef, I'd say you're only half-baked. Well, Where's the roasted chicken? Okay, okay, oh, I see it now. Under your overcoat, eh? Keeping the chicken close to your breast, are we? And where are the potatoes? Well, now, normally one puts mashed potatoes in a bowl, bud. Oh, and where is the cherry pie? I distinctly ordered cherry pie. I know I did. Where is it? Where? Well, I don't understand. Look up. Up where? There? Oh, great. I asked for cherry. Not banana cream.
Oh, that's pretty painful to watch.
Yeah. Their fall from grace was a long one because once upon a time they were absolutely hilarious. As good as the best of them.
Ruth Ann Speller.
Bucky became a terrible alcoholic. Very unpleasant to be around. He also contracted tuberculosis, which made it impossible to do all that physical stuff that was his bread and butter as a performer. He was able to get occasional work as a gag writer for acts like Wheeler and Woosley, or Harry Langdon. But his drinking kept him from keeping any of those jobs for too long.
Walker Wellman.
Becky, on the other hand, had more of her survival instinct intact, but she had a bit more luck on her side, too. For years, Groucho Marx felt guilty about what happened to his friends Bucky and Becky when they followed him and took his investment advice. All three lost thousands and thousands of dollars. Groucho managed to bounce back quite famously with the Marx Brothers' hit run of movies and stage shows, but Becky and Bucky were still scraping by. Groucho, seeing troubles in his friends, the troubles his friends were going through, introduced them to some influential people in the booming new world of radio.
Gerald Sutter.
I remember the day Groucho invited me to lunch in New York with Becky and Bucky. I was producing a few shows for CBS Radio, mostly soap operas and musical reviews, and was looking for something fresh to do. And Groucho plants the idea for me to do a show with Becky and Bucky. You know, I liked the idea right away. It was, although the idea of Bucky being a mute on a radio show, as well as having a bad drinking problem, made me, you know, more than a little hesitant, you know? Becky, however, I thought had real potential to be a radio star. I decided that we should record what we called back then an audition show, sort of what pilots offer television programs these days. That recording still exists somewhere, I do believe.
That recording does exist. Here's a sample of that audition show. This is the only time Becky and Bucky did a radio show together. It was never broadcast.
Becky, who's out the door?
Oh, I hope it's not that awful gangster.
Gangster?
Yeah, he's on to me, I tell ya. I was the only one to witness that jewelry store robbery.
Who's that?
Oh, I'm done for, I know it.
Oh, what on earth are you talking about, Becky?
It's Muscles. Muscles Marinara.
That's his name? Muscles Marinara?
Oh, no, it's him. Please, Mr. Linguini. Signora Lasagna. Mr. Minestrone? I mean...
This is a terrible Muscles Marinara?
Oh, dear.
Ah, the strong, silent type there. He doesn't look so mean to me, Becky. Easy there, John Spillinger.
Look out! He's getting up. He's scrawny, but he looks fierce. And he's carrying something. It looks like he's pointing it at you. He's carrying a rod?
Yeah, it's a rod, all right. A curtain rod.
Oh, don't you get the message? It's curtains for me.
CBS got cold feet. so did the sponsors. They were sold on Becky, but as I feared, Bucky was seen as a major liability for the network. Plus, the writers were already complaining that it would only get more difficult to create scenarios that where Bucky's mute character could play a part, that it was holding back the real force that was driving the show. Becky Beans.
Becky Beans show co-star, Ruth Ann Speller.
A decision had to be made, and I know it was a difficult one to make. Those two had never been separated like this before. Predictably, Bucky took it hard. Really hard. Now, a lot of people in the business who knew them all had their opinions. And I know some people judged Becky for going forward without her brother. But I was not one of them. She had to move on and live her life and explore her talents. And thank God she did. That show, at its peak, was absolutely wonderful. It gave a lot of people real joy during some really hard years, and I am, to this day, very proud of the work we did on that program. And even when he was at his worst, she never stopped trying to help Bucky. Though that all proved to be in vain.
The Becky Beans radio show, sponsored by Alpha Dent Tooth Cream, ran from July 15, 1936, to December 19, 1940 on the CBS network. More than 200 episodes from the show still survive, and many of these shows are, in all actuality, quite funny. The show follows the fictional life and trials of the washed-up movie star Becky Beans. Even her cast members call her a has-beans behind her back. Becky is always trying to make a comeback of some sort, with hilarious results. The show is very popular, and is considered a landmark series from the golden age of radio. The riches-to-rags Becky Beans character, never giving up on her quest to become great again, really resonated with Depression-era audiences, who saw themselves in her, a nation also struggling to get itself back on its feet. It starred Becky Beans as a fictional version of herself, along with Ruth Ann Speller as her long-suffering assistant Ruth, and Arne Waite as her goofy agent Arne. The three made for a terrific team.
Arne! Oh, Arne! Please, tell me that you're still feeling sick!
What?
Oh, Becky, please. You can't be serious about this. Good! It sounds like you still have that nasty cold.
Oh, thanks for your concern, Florence Nightingale. I'll have you know that I'm at the... the tail end of it.
Sure you are. Give me that mug you're drinking out of.
Hey!
Becky!
Still full of my germs. Are you crazy?
She's trying to make herself sick, Arne.
Is that true, Becky? Why on earth would you want to do such a thing?
I'm up for that starring role in the new MGM picture, and I need to be thoroughly and totally convincing as a woman who's dying of scarlet fever.
If all they need is proof of how effective you are at dying on screen, all they have to do is watch your last six pictures.
What was that? Actually feel a little lousy now. What were the first symptoms that you felt, Arne?
Well, as we can plainly see in your case, first you start to suffer from mental delusions.
Please, and let's put an end to all this nonsense. The last thing I want to do is play nurse for you two all weekend.
Oh, that's right. You were once a nurse years ago, weren't you, Ruth?
Aw, nuts. The only thing she's nursed since then is a hangover.
That's easy. We can just screen your last picture.
I'll get the popcorn.
Oh, no, that's okay. There's only so much corn I can take in one sitting.
Go get bent, why don't you, Arne?
Arne Waite.
You have to give Becky tremendous credit. I mean, she was willing to go really far in terms of making fun of herself and her image. And her real-life flops and failures and humiliations and irony... Of all irony, she made a big success out of all of it. And she was so generous to work with. She always made sure that Ruth Ann and I got some of the best lines in the show. She was real class. We all loved her.
Ruth Ann Speller.
But she did have her demons. She never ever took anything out on us. But she worked very hard. harder than anyone else. And her brother, Bucky, was a tremendous source of pain and hurt for her. Bucky would hang around the studio after our broadcasts, and how he and Becky would just argue. It was so unpleasant to hear.
They would never argue in front of us, of course, but you could hear them from inside a dressing room. Becky yelling and Bucky making all sorts of violent clatter in response. There was one time I heard the screaming and the shouting coming from Becky's dressing room. I heard every word.
What do you want me to do, Bucky? What do you want me to do? I'm sorry, okay? How many times do I have to tell you I'm sorry? Well, I'm trying. I'm trying, but you have to try too. How many times do I have to say it? You have to stop drinking. You stop that! Stop it! Stop it now! You almost hit me! No, that's not really fair, Bucky. That's not fair at all. Really? Really? When? I'll tell you when you decide to get your act together, mister. Mom and Dad are dead now, Bucky. They screwed both of us up. Yes, they did. You have to let it go, Bucky. Yes, you have to let it go. I want to help you. You're my brother, and you give me more hell than anyone I know. But I love you. Here, you need money. I'm going to write you a check. It's okay. It's okay. Apology accepted. No need to thank me. Okay. Here you are. Take this check, Bucky. Just do me one favor. Promise me you're not going to go to the liquor store with it. What are you doing, Bucky? You're tearing up my check. Why are you putting it in your mouth like that? Bucky.
According to her co-star, Ann Waite, that's exactly what happened almost word for word the night he overheard that conversation between Becky and Bucky in November of 1939. Now, the cast and crew had heard the same type of argument coming from Becky's dressing room before, but there was just one problem. Becky's troubled brother, Bucky, had already been dead for almost a year from complications from his tuberculosis. Gerald Sutter.
It was at that time that she started to snap, but we pressed on with the show, and in hindsight, maybe we should have. It's so tragic. I'm sorry.
Some people said she was slowly going insane. Maybe. I'll say this, though. No one else wants to admit it, even now. But I'll tell you, Becky wasn't the only one who noticed Bucky's presence.
Oh, I know. I've heard Ruth Ann mention it in interviews. But I have to say, I find it all hard to believe. Becky was suffering from mental illness, as the record now plainly shows.
That night, when I would be leaving the studio theater alone, something I absolutely dreaded doing, I swear to you that I heard things. Footsteps coming from behind me. But when I turned, no one was there. And I would suddenly hear the sound of a man wheezing. Not unlike the sound of a man suffering from tuberculosis. Sometimes, and this would make my blood run cold, the rattle of a cowbell, Bucky's cowbell.
It seemed like it might have been contagious. You know what they say about the power of suggestion? Yeah, we all started to notice things around the studio, I suppose. What's that? Did I ever hear anything myself? I'm sure that I did. That could have been anything. Rats, old radiator pipes, the studio theater wasn't an old building even at that time, you see. And old buildings, they make noises. That's what old buildings do.
I know what I heard, and I definitely know what I felt.
Let me go on the record by saying that I think there may have been someone in the cast or crew doing it all as a joke. A very sick and insensitive joke, but a joke nonetheless. Yes, I heard the cowbell late one night in the studio. It was so ghastly. Who would do such a thing? It's just terrible.
The show predictably suffered as Becky's condition worsened. It was quietly canceled in 1940 due to poor ratings. Kendra Fury, author of Hollywood Unexplained.
I am particularly obsessed with the story of Becky Beans. She was a great artist, very underappreciated today. She devoted her life to just two things: her craft and her brother, Bucky. She was never married or had children of her own, and not long after her radio show goes off the air, she ends up in the Highland Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina, along with another famous patient residing there, Zelda Fitzgerald. I wonder what kind of conversations those two must have had. It is in my opinion that there is more to her story than simply what the plain old vanilla record shows. As any thorough researcher can tell you, there's always more to the story. For one, the Waverly Theater in New York City, where her radio show was performed, is to this day overflowing with accounts of strange noises and goings-on. The most frequently heard noise is that of a gently rattling cowbell, a sound which no one has ever seemed to be able to trace the source of. And as you know, Becky and Bucky Beans are all but forgotten to most people today. But many people still hear that cowbell without knowing the association.
Walker Wellman.
Very few people on this earth scale to such heights as Becky Beans and plummet to such miserable deaths. Alcoholism and schizophrenia composed the sad and final notes of her coda. She dies in the Highland Hospital on February 7th, 1941, exactly 2 months after the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ruth Ann Speller.
I like to remember the good times. The good times we had are forever locked snug and tight in my heart. No one can ever take that away. I was very lucky to know her.
Aaron Waite.
Oh, what I would give to have some of those days back. The love, the laughter. What a great and giving heart she had.
Gerald Sutter.
I just hope wherever she is, that she's finally at peace, and that if God is good and just, we'll meet again someday.
This is your own Becky Beans, sending you hugs and goodnight kisses. Remember to always keep your chin up and follow that star wherever it may lead you. Good night, folks.
And that's our program. Thanks for tuning in to Audiophile Search. Till next time, I'm Alex Seven.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Martina Da Silva.
Laugh, clown, laugh. Even Even though something inside is grieving, laugh, clown, laugh. Don't let your heart grow too mellow. Just be a real punchonello fellow. You're supposed to brighten up a place, so laugh, clown, laugh. Face, so laugh, clown, don't frown, don't let the world know your sorrow. Be a palliative, laugh, clown,
concludes this episode. Again, many thanks to Alex Severn and our good friends at Audiophile Search. The musical performance, Laugh, Clown, Laugh, by Sam Lewis, Joe Young, and Ted Fiorito, was arranged and performed by Martina Da Silva, accompanied by Dove Mansky. Our show was produced by Gustavo Rodriguez, Daniel and Rebecca Graves, and myself for Fireside Mystery Productions. It was directed by Annabelle Rollison. Our theme music is by Jason Graves. Our musical score was improvised by Steve Blanco. Our sound designer is Greg Russ. Our technical director is Johnny Goddard. And our production assistant is Brontis Jane Orengo. Stay tuned for the next podcast episode of Fireside Mystery Theater. It comes out on Monday, the 31st of October, Halloween. For our listeners in the New York City area, join us for our next live taping, Sunday, the 30th of October, at the Slipper Room. The theme? Strange Anatomy. Tickets on sale now at slipperroom.com. Also, for fans in the New Jersey area, we will be performing a special live show at the Bickford Theater at the Morris Museum on Sunday, the 4th of December. All ages are welcome. Tickets on sale now at morrismuseum.org. This is Ali Silva with your ever-faithful reminder to mind the shadows.